And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder. Yay.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder here at The View from Over Here on CRN Talk Digital Radio. I'm here in the studio today with Malcolm, our producer, Jerry Cutler, who's going to give us some very interesting movie and TV reviews. And stay tuned for our special guest today, later on, Mariette Hartley.
By the way, before you make your comments, I just want to explain one thing. When we say live from Los Angeles via New York, or live from New York via Los Angeles, it's actually the three of us guys here were born in Brooklyn, New York, but we've relocated to Los Angeles, California, where we do our broadcast. So in case anybody had any questions of that intro, that's the meaning of it. Anyway, Stan,
yeah,
take
so
over.
If you have a question, whether you like it or don't like it, you can call us at 800-336-2225.
And if you were born in Brooklyn, let us know.
Okay, how about some words of wisdom? Looking through the papers, that's how we get our information. Did you know that the Oxford Dictionary, the Oxford English Dictionary, picks new words each year that make the grade, so to speak? And this year, for 2013, the winner is selfie. For those of you who don't know, a selfie is a handheld photograph that you're taking of yourself with your little itty-bitty iPhone, iCamera, or whatever. Another word that is made the grade is Bitcoin, okay? Some of you know what a Bitcoin is, and some of you don't know what a Bitcoin is.
I've been listening to CNN and some of the stations, and some of these newscasters have been... They don't know what Bitcoins
are. No, they don't.
It's so
most people
confusing.
Don't. It's a digital currency, okay? It's like the future, but that part of the future is not here. I remember on a Star Trek program, they were talking about, what does this spaceship cost? And the answer was, it doesn't cost anything. We pay for it with credits. Well, that's Bitcoin taken to the future about a couple of hundred years.
But that's old.
Credits.
Yeah, is something as 2 bits? Is that...
Yeah, 2 bits. That's a quarter. That's not a Bitcoin. Bitcoin now goes for maybe close to $1,000. Anyway, a couple of other words have made the grade. Showrooming. Most people don't know what showrooming is. That is going to check out a new product at a real store, okay? And if they charge $100 for it, then you go to buy it online for maybe $50 or whatever. And one other word that has made the grade, and I do this once in a while, I didn't know what it was or that you had a word for it, and it's called binge watching. That's when you get you go to your TV set and you get on demand and you watch maybe 50 back shows of something all in one sitting until you're ready to pass out.
Yes, we did that with Heartland. It was I think for 3 years. Homeland.
Homeland, yes. Yep. I watch that live every, not live, but I watch it currently every week.
Right. One weekend, we did 3 years worth of programming.
Wow. Okay.
I felt like Brody. I was brainwashed.
Hey, let's go on. We have in the papers today, almost every day, the Iran nuclear deal. Such a deal. Are our so-called negotiators naive, or are they just plain stupid? One thing is for certain, the Iranians are not stupid. Anyway, going on to another subject, I was channel surfing the other night, and I just happened to come across a program called Six by Sondheim. And for people who don't know, Sondheim is a very prolific composer who not only writes music, but he also writes the words. The man is 83 years old now and is still cranking out work. And most people are not aware of the fact that he wrote the lyrics for West Side Story and Gypsy, a composer, no less. The guy has an amazing career, truly amazing.
And a lot of people don't know that Leonard Bernstein did the music for West Side Story. I don't know who did Gypsy. Do you know?
Gypsy?
The music?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't Bernstein.
Bernstein.
Bernstein or Stein?
Hey, pronounce it Bernstein, I think.
Well, I've known Steins that were Steins and Steins that were Steins.
They're very interchangeable, yes.
But yeah, more people know that Leonard Bernstein or Stein wrote the music, but I don't think hardly anybody knew or knows that Stephen Sondheim wrote the lyrics. To me, the lyrics are as good as the music. Some of it just amazing, especially Officer Krupke.
Well, lyric writers like Gershwin, very hard to find, Sondheim and Gershwin. You know, the old guys wrote brilliant lyrics. Today, that's sorely missing.
Well, wasn't Gershwin, George's brother,
George
Ira,
and Ira,
didn't he write the mainly the music, or did George do?
Ira wrote the words.
Ira did the lyrics, yeah. And they were magnificent.
Well, Cole Porter, I love. These great words, you know, in at that whole era.
Where was that? Cole Porter, yes.
The 30s and 40s?
And 40s and probably into the 50s, but Cole Porter was also.
Now we have rap music.
well, that's it. I mean, rap music
it's
is...
It's not music.
It's noise.
It's fallacious to say that, yeah.
Anyway, from rap music, let's jump over to cockroaches. A study was made about the New York City cockroaches, okay? In New York City, the cockroaches are so strong and sturdy that they are almost immortal. They can not only live and thrive in the terrible city of New York, which could be disastrous, depending on where you live, but they can also handle the inclement weather, the freezing cold and the hot summers. Now, I'm not saying New York is a bad place to live. You know, the three of us come from there, so how bad could it be?
Well, and the three of us moved.
And yes, we did move. Okay. But the cockroaches didn't. They're still there, and they are thriving.
Well, at the end of the summer, around the Labor Day area, the Museum of History does a retrospective on cockroaches.
And how interesting!
No, they are come from. They're involved from prehistoric. They existed with dinosaurs.
You mean the cavemen had to put up with the cockroaches?
Well, before the cavemen, before there was man, there were roaches, and they also can live between subtropic weather and Antarctic weather. They're survivors, and I know in my house in the kitchen we had a deal. They could stay in the kitchen. But they couldn't come in the bedroom. But I lived in an old brownstone along Central Park West. There was nothing you could do except spray it. And by the time the second generation roach appeared, they were immune to the spray. And the second generation appeared about, I think, 16 hours after the first generation. They multiplied like crazy. Plus, if you kill a roach that's pregnant, they still can give birth. Anyway, that's...
Well, okay, I'm glad about telling us all this insight about cockroaches. It's been very informative. Let's go on. Last week, 72nd anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack, which a lot of people really thought was a sneak attack by Japan. But in reality, over the years, we've learned that it was more from an American screw-up as opposed to a sneak Japanese attack. Are we getting the signal?
Okay. No, we're getting...
Okay. All right, no answer yet. Okay, so we may have to fake that
one. No, I think Paul has her on the line right now.
Okay, anyway, we'll keep going a bit until we have our guest online. If you ever go to Oahu, I don't know if you guys have been there, and you go to the Arizona Memorial, and usually there's somebody there who is a veteran of that day, and he salutes, and it's very touching to watch. An older gentleman, maybe 90-something, standing up barely and saluting his fallen comrades that are still under the ocean.
Mm.
It's really something.
Well, when I went to the Pearl Harbor, we took the boat out to where the boats were sunk. Probably about 90% of the people on the boat were Japanese nationals.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know... But, I mean, my thought was, who won the war?
Well, you know, Hawaii has always had a large Japanese population then, during, and now.
Yeah, so, well, Japanese, Chinese. I mean, it's their territory. It's, you know, you don't realize how far, you know, Hawaii is until you go there. It's really not. I mean, it's a state, but it's not. The culture-wise has nothing to do with our country.
But Japanese descendants are very, very large in number, and the politicians mostly are Japanese descendants.
Yeah. And then I didn't want to say anything, you know, anything negative. I mean, it was just, you know, a fact of life that they were there.
It's not negative. It is what it is. Yeah. That's all.
And anyway, Stan, I believe we have Married Hartley on the phone right now.
We do? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Hi, is this Mariette Hartley?
Yes, it is.
Hi. Hey, I have to tell you, I remember your first movie when you played with those two cowboys. Oh, by the way, this is Stan Weisleder. Have Malcolm with me and Jerry Cutler. Malcolm, you know, Jerry Cutler. Jerry, say hi.
Mariette.
It's hi.
Rabbi Jerry Cutler. How are you?
My gosh almighty, how many people are there? It's too early in the morning for all you people.
Well, as I was starting to say, I remember what I think was your first movie. You played it with Joel McRae and Randolph Scott.
Yes.
I remember that movie. I thought it didn't really make it big, but I liked it. I really did. And I remember when you did a thing on TV, you know, when you were a babe way back and you had two belly buttons.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Two belly buttons?
Yeah, it was a TV special, a science fiction.
It was Gene Roddenberry. I had done Star Trek, and I had Stupped Spock.
Ooh.
And so I figured, you know, it was pretty... Listen, I came from Connecticut. What did I know from... You know, from out of space and
fancy stooping.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it was that fancy. It was, but I certainly didn't know anything about cowboy movies. You know, I mean, my first movie was Red Shoes with Maura Shearer. So,
that was a hell of a movie. I think I've seen that about a dozen times.
Oh my God! And when you know who was the cinematographer, and you know, and you learn all of these wonderful things on TCM. You know, speaking of Pearl Harbor, one of my great moments about 2 months ago, they did a festival for Ride the High Country. They do a Western festival every year. And one of the things I really wanted to see was Manzanar, which was the concentration, Japanese concentration camp up there. And, of course, it was closed because of all the closings in the government.
It was closed for repairs.
Yeah, right.
I think the correct thing would be internment camp. I don't know if concentration camp would be.
All right, internment camp. Well, the interesting thing, apparently, is, and why people love to go there, is because they made such a beautiful thing of it. You know, the Japanese do these extraordinary things with gardens and wherever they happened to be, as painful as it was.
Yeah, and you know what the most amazing thing was? Some of the internees joined up, and they had their own regiment, went to Europe, and they were, I believe, the most highly decorated infantry regiment in the whole U.S. Army.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, but they were led by a white officer.
Yeah, I think they have several movies, old movies, World War II movies
about
that.
Well, there was one where I believe Van Johnson played the officer in command, and the guys, they whoops, there we go, don't go away.
No,
we have to do a station break.
I think we still have 60 seconds.
All right, Mariette, don't go away, okay? Right, we'll be right back after this break.
Stan, we still have 30 seconds.
Why is he playing the music now?
Why are you playing the music, Paul?
30 seconds. Okay, Malcolm, go ahead. Fill up 30 seconds.
I first met Mariette at Nate and Al's many years ago. And she took this little baby who was, a mother was holding. She just fawned over this kid. What a beautiful, she held it.
Okay, Jerry, hold that thought. Now we have to go to the break.
And loving.
We're retiring. Hold it, Jerry.
Mariette, hi. Stan Weisleder here with Malcolm and Jerry. Mariette, tell me, Tell us, yeah. What do you want to talk about? What are you doing now? What's happening with your life?
Oh, gee, I was just going to continue talking about another movie I saw about Pearl Harbor the other day.
Okay, well, which is?
I don't know. It's just such a stunning part of history. And movies are so amazing to me, that and books and all. I mean, they really tell me things. I was born during it. So this was a movie with John Garfield called, it was called Air Force, but it was about the Marianne.
Oh, yeah, I remember that movie.
Well, it was just on. You know, TCM showed all of these amazing movies.
Yeah, I love that station, by the way.
Oh, God.
I love AMC also, but they have commercials. TCM is no commercials.
Well, okay, so let's see.
Before my time, I don't remember those movies.
Mm. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
If you want to see a great war movie, they had the Apocalypse was on.
The new version. Do it. No.
New version?
The unedited version, or the re-edited version.
No, I don't know. Listen, Air Force is plenty for me. No, it was such a terrific film.
Well, my son now goes to UCSB, and one of the courses he's taking, it's about the Vietnamese War and how that changed society and religion. So I'm curious to see, you know, what they talk about, because that, you know, to me, that was a major part of my life.
Sure.
The Vietnam, and I think it did change politics totally.
Oh, I think it totally changed politics.
But that would be another topic for another show.
Okay, so let's see. I mean, the most amazing thing is that I am the age that I am, and I'm not going to tell you what that is. But
we could Google it.
and I'm still working. I'm still here. Sondheim show last night, which I loved, and I'm still here. And
well, as I told you off the mic, you still look wonderful. You still look beautiful.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's a nice time of life. I'm married to an absolutely wonderful mensch of a man, and I have 900 grandchildren.
James Rockford,
one,
right?
One little one that's just beginning to get on all fours.
Wasn't your husband Jim Rockford?
Yeah, right. I wouldn't marry him. He's got bum knees. But anyway, Jimmy and I did 250 commercials together. Can you believe it?
Wow.
Yeah, we did 7 years of commercials, and they were seminal. You know, I mean, they really were seminal and wonderful to do, and I got to meet some of the greatest people, the people who, you know, created them, Bob Gage and, I mean, they're just all the Doyle Dane Birnbach guys. I mean, they were just sensational and loving and creative and taught me more about comedy than probably anybody.
Yeah, I think that those commercials are probably like in the Hall of Fame of TV
Should
commercials.
Be, yeah. The other person who taught me more about comedy was, of all people, Bert Lahr.
Ah. Bert Lahr. Wow, I remember him.
You remember him. You should remember him, for God's sake. And you're not. Anyway, so he and I did a tour together when I was working at the Shakespeare Festival under John Houseman. John started the Shakespeare Festival, the Stratford Shakespeare Festival in Stratford, Connecticut. And we did A Midsummer Night's Dream and Winter's Tale with Bert Lahr.
Wow.
And I played the female lead at Leeds. And I remember I came off stage at one point because I just finished doing a monologue, which always got laughs, and it didn't get laughs that night. And I came off stage, and he was playing bottom, so he had his, you know, his donkey's head underneath his arm. He's just getting ready to go on. And I said, Bert, they didn't laugh. How come they didn't laugh? And he said, you want to know, kid? And I said, oh, I don't know. And he said, it's because you wanted them to, kid. Oh, my God, that is the greatest piece of advice about, particularly about comedy. You cannot read the tagline. They can't read the tagline on your face. They can't, or it's gone.
Yeah, I forgot who said it. You know, that drama wasn't hard, but comedy is.
Comedy is, yeah, they both are.
Dying,
if you don't have the chops, they're easy, no, difficult. So.
Comedy is the hardest part of acting, always. In fact, the best comedians usually make the best drama actors or actresses.
I don't know that that's true.
You don't?
I mean,
okay.
I've certainly seen actors, particularly who, well, the actresses too, who have desperately wanted to do drama.
Yeah, Mary, could you hold on for another segment? Or are you?
Sure.
Okay, because we have to break right now. You're listening to CRNTalkRadio.com. And this is The View from Over Here. And we'll be back in about 2-3 minutes, depending on how many commercials we have.
Yeah.
Okay, Paul, take it away.
Hi, Stan Weisleder here in the studio, and we are talking to Marriott Hartley. Okay, Marriott,
yes.
Question for you. If you had your choice about any kind of part or role or movie or play or whatever that you could pick from, what would that be?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I really love theater. I mean, that's my... that's what I was raised on. That's what I started in, and when I was 10. And film has been an odd kind of a stepchild for me. I kind of backed into it. I love that I'm going to be doing Lion in Winter this spring. I've done it before, and I did it with my daughter. And this spring, my daughter and I are going to be doing it again. So I'm very excited about it.
Where is this?
It's going to be at the Colony Theater here in Burbank. Last summer, I did something called the Marini Strad there, which got terrific reviews. And it's a beautiful little theater. It's like a little velvet-seated New York small theater. It's lovely.
All right, well, before you do this, we'd love to have you back just before and talk about it.
Oh, sure.
You and your daughter.
Oh, that would be wonderful. We'd love that.
Okay, I'll make a note of it.
Oh, good.
By the way, I was going to ask you, did you ever do live television?
Oh, gosh, yes, of course. I didn't do it like, Playhouse 90 or any of the big ones because I was still in Connecticut, but... actually, I have a wonderful story about that. I was 14, and I was the president of my drama club at Staples High School in Westport. And I happened to be watching Requiem for a Heavyweight, which was one of the first live television shows that they did. John Houseman actually produced it. And I happened to look.
There, Jack Palance. Was Jack Palance the...
Jack Palance was in it, yeah. And but I happened to notice who had written it, and it was Rod Serling. And I was so excited that I called him at his home. Now, I don't do that today. I'm too shy. And I said, would Mr. Serling, and he answered the phone, and I said, would you please come and speak to the drama club? And he did. And he was very handsome, and we all fell in love with him, and he had his... he had his pipe, and he sat on the teacher's desk, and oh, it was fabulous. Okay, cut. I am now coming out of the Metro Golden Mayer, the gate there. Ken Hollywood was the security guard, and I just finished doing Ride the High Country, and I was under contract now for seven. Supposedly, I was one of the last contract players, and I was walking out, and this long. Limousine pulled up next to me, and somebody cranked down the window. It was before push-button windows. And this gorgeous man and this beautiful voice and this wonderful pipe looked out of the window and said, well, hello. And I said, oh, my gosh, Mr. Serling. Oh, I can't believe it. My name is Marriott Hartley, and you won't remember me, but blah, blah, blah. And I told him the whole story. He said, no, I do. I said, well, I'm out here now, and I'm looking for work, and gosh, if you have anything. In 2 months, I did one of the great Twilight Zones that he wrote for me, which was so wonderful. And, those were my blessed days. They really were. I was so lucky. I just kind of stepped from one thing to another. But, I mean, as far as, great films or great, I don't know, listen, I'm up for grabs. I mean, I've just finished doing two independent films, which
no,
I
Malcolm,
love doing,
you can't
and I
grab
did a
her.
Webisode, for God's sake. I mean, we just have to be flexible and open for anything and willing to do anything.
Well, as someone said, that the problem is that Meryl Streep gets all the great roles for older actresses.
For younger actresses. So you haven't read my book, right?
No.
Oh, I open my book with a monologue that I wrote for my children's school as a fundraiser, called "Here a Streep, There a Streep, Everywhere a Streep." And I wrote it in 1985, I think. Yeah.
What is the name of the book?
It's called "Breaking the Silence," and it was a bestseller. And it's I republished it, and you can get it on Amazon or Barnes and Noble. It's you know, I speak, you know, various places, and I bring my book and I sell my book, and it's been a wonderful ongoing thing. I'm trying to write another one, but I find that very hard.
So it's Breaking the Silence.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful monologue that the publisher Putnam wanted to put in the beginning of the book, and I said, "Oh gosh, nope." They said, "Please trust us. It's wonderful," and it's basically about sibling rivalry, and it's the fact, and it was a true story that, you know, she was on every major movie magazine and regular magazine and Life magazine and Newsweek, and I, you know, as the actress of the 80s, and I was on my way to a kind of wonderful honeymoon with my then husband, and I said, I stopped in the middle of the aisle, and I said, "Well, there go the 80s. And from that point on, it's a conversation with God about all the characters she's going to play, including me, in a film. So I tell you, I did it at the fundraiser, and there was not a dry eye in the house. There was so much laughter. It was really fun.
Now, you mentioned that you're doing a play coming up soon with your daughter.
Right.
How old is your daughter?
She's 30. She's, yeah.
Well, was this a movie that Catherine Hepburn was in?
Yes, Lion in Winter.
Lion in Winter.
Peter O'Toole and Catherine Hepburn.
Uh-huh, and my daughter's playing Elise, who's the woman that is having an affair with Henry. So it gets a little incestuous.
Well, Henry had affairs? I didn't know that.
Oh, I know. Well, none of those kings ever had affairs.
Anyway, Mary, we're at the end of our time.
Right.
Thank you very much for being on our show.
And we want her back, Malcolm.
Oh, definitely. Before the your play at the A Lion in Winter at the Colony, definitely
you
want you
come.
Here talking
you
about
come and see it. It's one of the great, intelligent, funny, dramatic plays. I absolutely love it. You know, that's my commitment to acting, is to do both drama and comedy on that wonderful kind of acrobatic line that you know, so that you never quite know what's coming next.
And, well, thank you once again, and we look forward to speaking to you actually next year.
Thank you.
Next year.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next year. In a year.
Yeah, have a great holiday season.
Bye-bye. You're listening to A View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com, and we'll be back in 2-3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes.
Stan Weisleder, back in the studio with Malcolm and Jerry. Jerry
on,
Cutler.
On, what's the name of the show?
They know the name of the show. The show is The View from Over Here. We haven't changed it. It's always been that name.
Yeah,
okay?
But maybe people are just tuning in right now.
Well, that's their problem. They should tune in at the very beginning.
Get back to Jerry quickly.
Anyway, let's not take away from Jerry Cutler's time. He's going to give us some very interesting reviews. Jerry, it's all yours.
Thank you very much. I saw a very interesting film, and do you guys know the name of it? American Hustler.
Yeah, that's great promos on it, and the trailers look great.
They don't end. David O. Russell directed it. Now, David O. Russell came out with two pictures before that you might have seen. One was The Fighter.
Great movie.
Which won an Academy Award for someone, and also Silver Linings Playbook, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
And I haven't seen it.
You must see it. It's wonderful. It's fun, and the acting is superb. After that, he came out with this now. Now, this is a about a middle-aged Irving Rosenfeld.
Why do you think Rosenfeld?
He's played by Christian Bale. And it opens up with him fussing with an elaborate hairpiece, which he's trying to get into order on top of his head, which is very funny. It's sort of a metaphor used as a perfect intro to a movie about a pair of hustlers. He's one of them. The opening title card on the screen states that some of this actually happened. And it's true. Some of what they are portraying actually happened. And it did with Bale's character, Irving, straight from the headlines when a Long Island scam artist joined forces with FBI to avoid prison time. You might have remembered it. It doesn't go back that many years. The result was AbScam. AbScam?
I remember that one.
All right. It was a sting operation that resulted in the bribery convictions of no less than 7 congressmen and various other government officials in 1981, guys. Irving falls hard for smart, beautiful redhead Sidney Prosser, who is played by Amy Adams, a former strip dancer who assumes the alias of a British businesswoman named Lady Edith. Now, Amy Adams, I don't know if you can picture her as a strip dancer, because I never found her to be that sexy.
I can picture her as anything.
Well, I must tell you, she is so darn sexy in this movie, not as the strip dancer, but throughout the movie. She has gone through a metamorphosis, and she's very, very sexy. The two of them try to hustle a guy, and it happens to be an FBI agent, Richie DeMasso, played by Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
He uncovers their scam and makes them work for the FBI to catch greedy politicians. His boss is against every wacky suggestion that he comes up with. The boss is played by a very funny Louis C.K. I don't know if you've ever seen Louis C.K., know who he is.
On television, yeah.
He's on TV. He is wonderful in this characterization of his boss. And the popular mayor of Camden, New Jersey, who's also very prominent in this film, is played by Jeremy Renner, who I adore. I love this guy. Hurt Locker, remember? He was,
yeah.
Okay. Now, Jeremy Renner is a wonderful, wonderful actor. Of course, here he plays comedy, and his portrayal of this Italian mayor of New Jersey is outstanding, outstanding. And he's also caught up in this nefarious scheme.
Well, do they take this serious? Is it a comedy or?
It's a comedy.
It's a comedy.
Yeah, it's a comedy, and it also has one other person, and I must note because I'm madly in love with her.
Does Jeff know?
Jeff knows. I've told him many times, and that's Jennifer Lawrence. But everyone's in love with her. She plays Irving's outlandish, loony bin of a wife, and she steals every single scene she's in. Now, the New York film critics not only voted American Hustle's best movie of the year, but they gave the best supporting actress to Jennifer Lawrence. And I think she's just got it locked up. She's outstanding. Whenever she's on, she evokes so much laughter. And she is the perfect personification of a loony bin woman. I mean, she's a mother, she's a wife to this guy who's messing around with Amy Adams, and she plays it to the hilt. Now, he has done the movies before of all the fine actors returning from Silver Linings Playbook, Bradley Cooper, The Fighter, Bale and Adams, and Lawrence's portrayal of his ticking time bomb of a mad wife. She's angry, she's dissatisfied, she's brilliant.
Now, how many bagels?
I give this three bagels.
Three out of four?
Because the action is fat. It's a little long. I was getting a little antsy, and I some judicious editing would have improved this tremendously. Hey,
Jerry, hold the thought. We're coming up to a break, and we'll be back with
The View from Over Here
on CRNTalk.com.
Hi there, Stan Weisslater here on The View from Over Here, CRN Digital Talk Radio. I'm in the studio with Malcolm Berman, our erstwhile producer, and Jerry Cutler, Rabbi Jerry Cutler, giving us the benefit of his wisdom on all kinds of reviews. Yeah, Jerry, take it away.
Yeah, didn't you want to talk about the Sound of Music?
Yes, I want to talk about the Sound of Music.
So talk.
Okay, I also watch television. I watched this. I wasn't the only one who watched this. 18 million viewers watched Sound of Music. Obviously, because it's the holiday season, and Sound of Music is very much in tune with the Christmas holiday. And it was a wonderful, wonderful movie. And Julie Andrews, who I met, who's lovely. She's such a nice person.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, to really appreciate the movie, you have to see it on the big screen. The TV doesn't
do it
justice. Well,
the TV wasn't. It was a stage
play. Unless
you
have a big TV.
It was a live stage play, and sadly, they cast Carrie Underwood in the part of that Julie Andrews did so beautifully. Carrie Underwood is a wonderful singer, wonderful, but she is not an actor. And she's been getting a lot of criticism, and I want to tell all those people who are criticizing her, let her be, for God's sakes. This was a lifetime, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to appear in such an iconic film as Sound of Music. And she took it. Why shouldn't she? Everybody wants to be an actress, a starring actress. She gave it her best, but she couldn't do it. I would go after the people who cast her in it, the producers or director, whoever had the last choice to pick somebody. That's the person that they should go after. This girl is an incredible talent. Now, they knew right at the outset she wasn't an actor when they brought her in. When she tested for the part, I assume she tested for the part. Let her be. She gave it her all. The fact that it didn't come off well is not her fault. It's the fault of those who cast her. And I cringed. I cringed throughout because she did everything according to Carrie Underwood, not according to what the script mm-hmm. called for. But she did try. God bless her. And she took it very well, not as gracefully. She did actually. She quoted Christ. I forget how, but it was something to the effect with there are much more important things. Come on, than to spend your time criticizing. Why don't you look for love instead of downcasting someone?
Yeah, but I bet she cried all the way to the bank.
Well, you know what? It's got to have hurt her, and I'm sure it did. And the bank, well, I'm sure she's offered other parts. I don't know about the acting parts. Mm. But this really took somebody like a Julie Andrews to do, not to carry into it. But give her credit.
It's always hard to compete against what is viewed as perfection.
Okay, guys, we're...
It's that time again?
It's that time again, end of the show.
We have 30 seconds.
And we'd like to thank Jerry Cutler for coming in again, and invite Jeff back for next week. And then Merritt Hartley, thank you once again.
And what about me, Malcolm?
And
I'm sitting
Stan
here doing
Weisslater.
Nothing. Okay.
Well, you're supposed to sign us off.
All right. Stan Weitzleiter here. If you have any comments, questions, call us 800-336-2225.
And operators are waiting. See you next week. Or see you. Yeah, you can hear us on TV. Or internet. Bye.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.